Chapter 11. Now, looking back for just a moment, back to verse 9, here the prophet said, "And Jehovah said unto me," may God said it, "a conspiracy is found among the men of Judah and among the inhabitants of Jerusalem." That is a conspiracy against God, to try to get God out of their way and out of their thinking. They're worshiping the idols and trying to remove the concept of God from among themselves. Now in verse 18, there now is a conspiracy against Jeremiah. Now, he found out from God. God told him about it. Now notice this verse here, "And Jehovah gave me knowledge of it, and I knew it." That is, I knew it after God told me. "Then thou showedest me their doings. For I was like a gentle lamb that is led to the slaughter. And I knew not that they had devised against me, saying, Let us destroy the tree with the fruit thereof, and let us cut him off from the land of the living, that his name may be no more remembered." Now this is the way they felt toward God first and toward Jeremiah. Now they conspired against him. Jeremiah didn't know it until God revealed it to him, told him about it. And he said, "I was like a lamb. I was innocent. I was trying to do what God gave me to do. And I was innocent of any concept or idea of a conspiracy against me." All right, now when they said, "Let's get rid of the tree," that was Jeremiah, and the fruit of it was his teaching. And one of his children, Jeremiah was not a married man. He had no wife, no children. But so when talking about his tree and the fruit, they're talking about his life and his teaching. Let's get rid of it. We're tired of having here all these contrary things he's preaching to us, destruction. "Oh, Jehovah of hosts, who judges righteously, who tries the heart and the mind, I shall see thy vengeance on them, for unto thee have I revealed my cause." That is an expression of faith, but a little bit later that faith wavers. God doesn't act as quickly as Jeremiah thought he ought, but now he says, I know you're going to take vengeance on me. I know you'll handle this case. God always does. That's why Paul said, "Avenge not yourselves, beloved, rather give place to the wrath of God. For vengeance belongeth unto me, saith the Lord. I will recompense." Now, we read that, we believe it's true, but sometimes we grow impatient. And Jeremiah did. Jeremiah got impatient. God wasn't acting quick enough. So there's a good lesson here for all of us. Now, notice. "Therefore, thus saith Jehovah concerning the men of Anathoth." Now, that was his home. Anathoth was about 3 miles, if I remember correctly, north and a little east of Jerusalem. That was the home of Jeremiah and the priesthood also. Priests lived there. "Concerning the men of Anathoth that seek thy life, saying, Thou shalt not prophesy in the name of Jehovah, that thou die not by our hand." That's what they're saying. "Well, you quit prophesying in the name of Jehovah, or we're going to put you to death." All right, now notice further. "Therefore, thus saith Jehovah of hosts, Behold, I will punish them. The young men shall die by the sword. Their sons and their daughters shall die of famine, and there shall be no remnant unto them. For I will bring evil upon the men of Anathoth, even the year of their visitation." God's response to the threat of the people of Anathoth to destroy the home of Jeremiah, to destroy Jeremiah because he prophesied the name of Jehovah. God said, "I'm going to destroy them. I'll destroy some of them by war, sword, some of them by famine, that is, younger men and women by famine. God's going to bring a judgment." Now, in the next chapter, much of we love Jeremiah, and I certainly do love him and admire him. He's one of my favorite men of the Old Testament. Not his book. I like other books better, but I don't think any of the men of the Old Testament could draw my admiration any more than Jeremiah does. Now, notice, Righteous art thou, O Jehovah, when I contend with thee, yet would I reason because with thee. Now here's what he asked. Wherefore doth the way of the wicked prosper? Wherefore are all they at ease that deal there treacherously? Now that's a question that men raised back from earlier days. I forget now, Abraham, I think, raised the question. I know others did, or Job raised the question. Job was earlier than this. And that's been a question mankind all along. Why do the wicked prosper? Well, God doesn't necessarily prosper them above anybody else. They're just better schemers. And so they prosper because they scheme or work the thing that way, and they prosper. But anyway, now, Lord, don't get angry with me because of reason. That's what he's saying here at the first now. I contend with thee, yet would I reason to cause with thee. Now, I'm coming to God to reason this thing out. Now, here's what is why. That's the question now. Why does these prosper and be at ease when they deal so treacherously? Thou hast planted them, yea, they have taken root. They grew, yea, they bring forth fruit. Thou art near in their mouth and far from their heart. All right, now here these wicked, they prosper. You planted them, that is, you planted us here in this land. Now then, these folks have turned from God are prospering. He wants to know why. Why do they? And yet he says, you're near to them in their mouth, but not in their heart. They say a good word about God. Well, a lot of folk do that. Oh, they say pretty nice things about God, but they don't do what he says. The difference between having God in our mouth, having God in our heart. That's the point that that Jeremiah makes here. But thou, O Jehovah, knowest me. Thou seest me and triest my heart toward thee. Now, you know how faithful I've been to you, all that. Now, here's what he wants God to do. He's going to take it on himself to tell God how to run things. And we all have that fault sometimes. Now, notice. Pull them out like sheep for the slaughter, and prepare them for the day of slaughter. How long shall the land mourn, and the herbs of the whole country wither, for the wickedness of them that dwell therein? The beasts are consumed, and the birds, because they said, he will not see our latter end, that God won't. All right, now the question is, Lord, pull them out, kill them, let's get rid of them. Hurry up with this judgment. And that's the way we all feel. Why didn't the Lord send a judgment on this country or that country or this person or that person or this group or that group there? Why did he allow them to go on? All right, now, and Jeremiah, he'd like to pull them out and slay them right now. That's not God's way. And so now God reproves him for that. God didn't like that at all. Now, notice what it said. If thou hast run with a footman, and they have wearied thee, then how because things are as they are, that is, as though you're running a race with men. Now then, what are you going to do when you're running a race with a horse? That is when things get worse. In other words, what God is saying is, things are like they are now, and you're complaining. Things are going to get a whole lot worse before they get better. But I think that's true of this country. We complain about a lot of things in this country, but I think it's going to get a whole lot worse. We're just jogging along with the footmen now. We're going to be running with the horses and with the tanks and the machine guns. Be a different kind of a race then. What are you going to do then? If an individual can't stand an earthquake or a cyclone or something like that, how in the world would he endure a lot of dropping bombs and things of that nature? So, thing to do now is to leave that in the hands of God. I'm willing to do that. I think I am. I've tried to learn that lesson in life. I take conditions as they come day by day. They may not be as I would like them. There may be things that I'd like to see change. They are. But let me take things as they come, that when they get worse, I'm prepared for it. And things are going to get worse one of these days. All right, now that's the way God's reasoning with him here. All right, so now he moves on here. And he says, verse 15, what hath my beloved to do in my house, seeing she hath wrought lewdness with many, and the holy flesh is passed from thee? That is, the people, my beloved. That is, the Israel was God's beloved. He took him out of bondage, and as Hosea said, cleansed them up and made a wife out of them, unto him as a wife. And now then, in the house, she practiced lewdness with the idols, worshiping the idols, opposing my prophets, rejecting what the message I'm sending them. Now, what am I going to do about it? God hates that kind of a situation. Know what it says. When thou doest evil, then thou rejoicest. They rejoice in their evil. Jehovah called thy name a green olive tree, fair with goodly fruit, with the noise of a great tumult. He had kindled fire upon it, that is the green tree, and the branches of it are broken. Now, he used the figure of his beloved, that is his spouse. Now then, he speaks of it as a green olive tree, beautiful, beautiful green color, bearing fruit, beautiful colors, fruit from green to their dark color, all that. But now then, yet my people were like that. Now then, they're going to pour my wrath upon them, break the branches. I'm going to destroy that tree. That's what God feels toward them. And Jeremiah wanted to do it right now, but God rebuked him for that. No, let me handle that. For Jehovah of hosts, who planted thee, hath pronounced evil against thee because of the evil of the house of Israel and of the house of Judah, which they have wrought for themselves in provoking me to anger by offering incense unto Baal. Alright, now that's the great thing. Idolatry had led them into the immorality and other things. In this country, a few years ago, about a half a century now, a little more maybe, began its effort to rule God out of their thinking. And we'd had troubles, all right, but our troubles have mounted since then. Our internal problems, our crime, our crookedness, our wickedness, our immorality, the breakdown of the home, all that really began. Now, it hadn't been an ideal country even unto then. It never was, and never has been one. They've all been had their wickedness and their problems. But that's when really, when we tried to rule God out, that's when our troubles really began. Began to worship Baal. And we're running with a footman right now. Now, if we have a little trouble running with a footman, what are we going to do when we're running with the horses? Trying to outrun them. That's what God's saying to Jeremiah. That's his figure here. That's the figure he's using here. Now, like a green olive tree, I'm going to break it up. I'm going to get rid of it. All right? And because of what? Because of the evil. Now, here's the whole ground of it, which they have wrought for themselves in provoking me to anger by offering incense to Baal. For that leads then to immorality. That led to the unbelief and wickedness among them. All right. And Jehovah gave me knowledge of it. Wait a minute. Excuse me. And Jehovah gave me knowledge of it. Am I going over what my lesson is round about? All right, now she's as a speckled bird of prey. So all these nations round about, they also are birds of prey. Now they're going to prey upon Judah. Go ye, assemble all the beasts of the field, bring them to devour. Now the beasts of the field might not necessarily be men, but he's talking about the people who are in the field that I can use, because he turns next to nations. I'm going to use nations. Many shepherds have destroyed my vineyard. They have trodden my portion underfoot. They have made my pleasant portion a desolate wilderness. All right, now the shepherds are the kings. The kings and the priests, the leaders in Israel. That is, in Israel and Judah. The kings and the priests who had the spiritual welfare and direction of the people, while they have acted against God there, and they've trodden God's portion underfoot. They made a pleasant portion of the desolate wilderness. So who are we blaming here? The religious leaders and the political leaders. Now, we can't blame leaders either. That is a nation, the country. It mourneth unto me, being desolate. The whole land is made desolate, because no man layeth it to heart. Because they don't realize that it's because they turn from God unto Baal. What? And over in the Old Testament, he deals with that idea of the nations as his sword that he brings from one place upon another people. And that's God's always worked out. It still is. So when he brought the sword of the United States upon Arabia, here, whenever it was, last year, two ago, that was the sword of Jehovah. Now, when he brings it upon us, that still be the sword of Jehovah, because of our action and attitude toward him. Now, this class is a principle that I know I've dwelt on so many times. But I won't, when I finish my course and run my course and finish the race here, and you're faced with some of these things that I'm talking about, I want you to recall and remember what Homer said, that God, that's the way God is acting, God is acting in that this. So when that comes, you may say, this is the sword of Jehovah. This is the work of God, hand of God, upon a wicked people that ask for it from the prophets. Now it moves on now. They have sown wheat and have reaped thorns. Now Hosea said that they have sown to the wind, they've reaped the whirlwind. One of them, you sow to the wind, you get a cyclone back. This one is, you sow wheat in the wrong way and you get thorns instead. God doesn't bless it. God's already back at it. They have sown wheat and have reaped thorns. They have put themselves to pain and profit nothing. For you shall be ashamed of your fruits because of the fierce anger of Jehovah. That is great and good. See? And the anger there is a righteous indignation. It's never just taking vengeance like a man would. It's always the righteous consequence of an individual doing. The judgment is. And so that this is what he's teaching now. Right? Now I know that thus saith Jehovah against all mine enemies, mine evil neighbors, that touch the inheritance which I have caused my people, Israel, to inherit. Behold, I will pluck them up from off their land, and will pluck up the house of Judah from among them. Right? Now God's going to pluck up the nations, and he did. When Abraham came into the land of Canaan, God said the iniquity of the fullness of their iniquity is not yet full, so he couldn't cast them out. 400 years later, when he brought Israel in there, the wickedness had become full, so he plucked up those nations, gave their land to Israel. Now then, Israel had become corrupt and just like those nations that they supplanted. Now then, God said, I'm going to pluck them up. So I pluck up one, I'll pluck up another one. So it's not a question of whether you have been God's people. It's a question of, are you now? God always looks at you at the present, not what you were in the past. And it's what a person is now. Now look a little further. And it shall come to pass after that I have plucked them up, I will return and have compassion on them, and I will bring them again, every man to his heritage, and every man to his land. When we come over to the 18th chapter of Jeremiah, that when God says, I'll destroy a nation, if it repent and turn, I won't destroy it. If I say I'll bless a nation and it turns to wickedness, then I won't bless it. But always, the if condition is always there as to what God's going to do. God's going to act according to the if of what we do. That's going to determine his action. Now look a little further. And every man to his land. And shall come to pass, if they will diligently learn the ways of my people, to swear by my name, as Jehovah liveth, that is swear as Jehovah liveth, even as they taught my people to swear by Baal, then shall they be built up in the midst of my people. But if they will not hear, then will I pluck up that nation, plucking up and destroying it, says Jehovah. I think that last part there is a very important passage in your Bible, beginning with verse 15 there. Now here God's going to pluck up Judah and carry her away. He's going to then pluck up Babylon and plant Medo-Persia and let Judah come back. Now, if these nations will accept the ways of God, which they should learn from Judah, and do that, God will bless them. If not, he will not. And so that's where you see the principle there that I've been teaching for these several years, every time I had a chance teaching here. God uses one nation against another nation, and he still rules in the kingdom of men. Daniel said that, Daniel 4:17. Jehovah that ruleth in the kingdom of men, and setteth up over whomsoever he will. That's a passage that I'm sure. You may remember that there, Daniel 4, here in verse about 17, I believe it is. When it said there, the sentence is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the lowest of men. That is, he sets over it the kind of a man that'll carry it the way he wants it to go. That's one reason I've just about decided I'd quit voting, because God knows more about the kind of man he wants than I do. So he puts in whomsoever he will, sometimes even the lowest of men, because that will accomplish his purpose in leading that nation to destruction. It was destined to it anyway, don't you see? So this is a principle. I hope you'll mark that passage there, verses 15 down to 17, and recognize that God's the one that plucks up, God's the one that plants, and determines whether a nation's continue or whether it won't. All that righteousness exalteth the nation, sin a reproach against any people. The wicked shall be turned back into Sheol, even all the nations, plural, that forget God. So God's still in control. I'm glad for that. All right. Now, in the next chapter here, you have here two symbols here of God here. They points out here, the first one here is the linen girdle. Now, this is just a historical thing. Any question you have over what I've studied this morning? Have I made myself clear? Have I made clear what Jeremiah is saying? That's what I mean. All right, if you get Jeremiah, that's what I'm interested in. Right now, then said Jehovah unto me, go and buy thee a linen girdle, and put it upon thy loins, and put it not in water. Don't wash it. So I bought a linen girdle according to the word of Jehovah, and put it upon my loins. And the word of Jehovah came unto me the second time, saying, how long, I don't know. We worn that linen girdle. Now I expect that would be somewhere about 500 or 600 miles away. Now the question is, did he go, or was that a symbolic? Or is there put in a cleft somewhere nearer? No, I accept it for just exactly what it says. I suspect Jeremiah was glad to go on that trip and get away from the country there. He probably even had to walk, make 20, 25 miles a day. Take him quite a while to get there and quite a while to get back. But I imagine he enjoyed every bit of it. But now notice further. So I went and hid it by the Euphrates, as Jehovah commanded me. There ain't no question about that. So I read about individual trying to explain this way, that way, and some other way. And no need explaining. Explain itself. Now further. And it came to pass, after many days, that Jehovah said unto me, arise, go to the Euphrates, and take the girdle from thence which I commanded thee to hide there. I get another trip. So we're going to go back to your place. Now remember, he doesn't get on an airplane and fly over there. He doesn't get in his Cadillac and drive over there. He either walked or rode a donkey over there. One of them, my guess is he walked. All right, now notice further. Then I went to the Euphrates and digged and took the girdle from the place where I'd hid it, and behold, the girdle was marred. It was profitable for nothing. Right. So one more thing, already filthy when he took it off, no doubt. Worn it a long time, but don't put it in water. Don't wash it. People, and for a name, for a praise, and for a glory, but they would not hear. So why did he use a girdle? Because people had been as a girdle to me, and I girded them around me. They were my people, but they became marred. They became rotted. Now then, they're worth nothing. I'm going to destroy them as you would destroy that girdle. And now, I bury it there. Come back, go back and get it, rotted. All right, now they've been to me a girdle, now they've become rotten. I'm going to destroy them as that girdle destroyed them. Why do you fight these? Because then that's the country in which you're going to carry them, don't you see? That's where they would go. All right, and then second, as the bottles are all full of wine, and then they dash together and broken, so my people are drunk, but not with wine, they're drunk on their wickedness and corruption and all that. So I'm going to dash them to pieces, you with the jars of wine, and destroy them. So you have two illustrations of symbols, symbolic actions of the destruction of the people. And I think both of them are very apt. One has a girdle, because they've been a girdle, a God's girdle about him. And second, here, had been full of wine, they were drunk, and they were drunk on their wickedness and all that. So I would dash them to pieces and destroy them. But they didn't believe it. No, we're not, God's not going to do that. A little bit later they said, oh, the temple, we've got the temple. I think the Lord said that. So we'll start there next time. Down there about verse 9, I guess a good place to start. Yeah, the time is up. A little short this morning. But at any rate, we'll down there. The 13th chapter and verse 15, 13, 15. We'll start there next time.